Had enough of the been there, done that ideas? Tired of too much talk and so little action? Rewind now and welcome to Transformation and Change Radio with Dr. Kathy Obair, where the vision of true equity, inclusion, courage, and purpose meet powerfully. Dr. Kathy delivers with dynamic, engaging conversation in the most authentically brave dialogue on air today. This hit show will challenge you to explore current issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion and deepen your capacity to choose courage to speak up to greater inclusion in everything you do. Fasten your seatbelts and accelerate your effectiveness to become a powerful change agent in your life, community, job, and society. Imagine true equity and inclusion and get the tools to really manifest your vision. No frills, no fluff, just really powerful, good stuff. Transformation and Change Radio starts now.
Welcome to Center and Transformation Change Radio. I'm here for our 12th and final conversation on dismantling class and classism with Dr. Becky Martinez, Infinity Martinez Consulting.
Hello.
I'm feeling both excited to be in this conversation with our guest, the Reverend Dr. Jamie Washington, and sad that this is coming to an end. And so if I forget to say it at the end, Becky, I just want to personally thank you at my soul for saying yes to come on this journey with the audience, with me, to share best thinking, to meet with people about what are the dynamics of class and classism and how do we work to dismantle it and just try to put more out there, because I don't think there's anywhere near enough. So thank you for all you've done to support me get sharper, better, more committed.
You're welcome. It's been a great, year adventure in talking about things that are so meaningful to me, as well as meaningful to the work around inclusion, particularly with the social class and class identity framework and lens. So it's been a joy.
Mm. And what a way to have our final episode with the Reverend Dr. Jamie Washington of Washington Consulting Group. Thank you for coming back to the show, our dear friend.
Absolutely, absolutely. This is my absolute joy. And not only is it with two of my favorite people in the whole planet universe, but also it's a topic that feels very close to my heart, and one that we don't spend nearly enough time engaging how it shows up and impacts our lives. So just glad to be here with your brilliance and to have this wonderful conversation.
Yes. I really have us as family and just feel so grateful, because I know you and I have played for over 35 years. If people don't know you, there are at least three or four previous radio shows and other recordings that I know we've done. Washington Consulting Group. So for over 35, 36 years, you have been an active change agent leader to dismantle oppression, create true social justice and liberation in higher ed and many other industries. You come out of higher ed, and that's when our paths crossed. President of ACPA recently, president and co-founder of the Social Justice Training Institute with the three of us, our faculty, your work as a pastor with Unity Fellowship Church of Baltimore and an elder in the Unity Fellowship Church movement. I mean, there's so much folks can get on your website and learn more. But as I've grown with you, I mean, I'm a different change agent because you have been in my life around racism and classism, because you started telling stories early on. And I'm not sure I heard the difference as I came out of class privilege, and we'll hear your story in a moment. But I, again, want to deeply thank you for your work in the world and mostly for your love of me, because I am deeply different because you being in my life.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
I am loving just the two of you. I can't wait to talk about this. And what I appreciate is the full circleness. As SJTI, so the Social Justice Training Institute, was where I started really delving into class, right? That renewal experience. Mm-hmm. So had I not had that renewal part two, I don't know if I would be an author, you know, being somebody who's talking about this, at least in the field of academia, in such like deep, meaningful, intellectual, feeling-based ways. So I just want to thank you two for the space to talk about class and who we are. And so that opens up, Jamie, the question that we always start with is, tell us a little bit about your class story.
Sure. Well, I love, you know, as I think about my own, you know, kind of academic learning around class, right? And some of the earliest workshops that I did, one of my earlier workshops was through the lens of class. And I think that it was actually where I began to do classism work was with Equity Institute. With Class Action back at UMass, Kathy and Felicia Eskel and some of those folks there. So that's where I got to do some delving into the dynamics of class, coming from a background kind of academically and training, where I began to look at the entire umbrella of oppression, all of the identities, and really beginning to look at privilege and the marginalization, and came to find that I was only marginalized in three parts of my identity, if you will. And that was race, sexual orientation, and class, but lived with privilege around others. So began to delve into, I had kind of lived with the marginalization around class, but hadn't really looked at it or thought about it so much as marginalization, right? I come from a working class poor background and grew up in inner city North Philadelphia with working class, in a working class community with parents, one who did finish high school and went on to college, and one who did not finish high school. And so again, the intersection of race and class is very relevant in the context that my mother went to a church-related college, Allen University, right, where the options for women was home economics or teaching, right? And again, as we think about what that then gave her access to do, right, positioned her so comfortably or really in the working class space as she finished. So when we talk about, even as we talk about first generation college students, there is this notion that I still very much identify as a first generation, although, so first generation predominantly white institutions, is different than being first generation college period. But all of that to say that I grew up in a community that there was no college prep high school. I grew up in a community where, you know, there was rental property. Most of us lived in rental properties. I talk about as lower working class. I don't say poverty in that, we distinguish the space that we grew up in from the subsidized housing, which might be named as the projects. So we were better off because we lived in a row house, right? In our city, again, you know, as we think about, as I was growing up, I didn't think that much about what we had because everybody had the same thing, right? Which was, we had enough food to eat, right? It wasn't necessarily, all of the food was good to us, right? It wasn't necessarily what people would consider good today, or in the circles that I travel today. It's in the circles that I travel today that when I talk about eating the things that I ate growing up and still very much still love today, right? It's not the stuff that gets served at the receptions that I go to or at the luncheons or the dinners. So we ate a lot of canned and processed food. I didn't even know what fresh broccoli. Well, I didn't really even know what broccoli was. Mm. So, you know, there's so many dynamics to that class background experience. We could talk about the food we ate. We could talk about the spaces that we got to go to. So I tell folks, our leisure time and when we went on vacation was from my house, from where we lived, to my grandparents' house, which was in South Carolina. And I tell people all the time that I didn't even know you could go somewhere other than your grandparents' house for vacation.
Wow.
Until I was 32. So literally, I was finishing my doctorate before I ever went any place else for vacation than my grandparents' house, right? Because that's what we had access to, and that's what we understood. I'm the only one of the children in my family to have graduated from high school. There wasn't the plan. I didn't get discouraged from going to college, but as I'd said to Becky earlier, I wasn't encouraged to go to college, right? And I am one of very few people from my community that went to college. And many of the folks that I go back to, because my sister still lives in the house around the corner from where I spent most of my junior high school and high school years. Once I went off to college, my mother and sisters, after our father died, moved around the corner to a home, but in the same working poor community. She lives in that house still today. When I go back to that community, I'm still one of few who even left in my generation, and I'm seen as the one who made it out. As I consider my journey, it was higher education that made the difference. Mm-hmm. And having gone to undergraduate school and finding a passion and connection to exercise my voice in the context of higher education, going on to graduate school, going on to master's and PhD, that then propelled me into the space that I operate today, which I would, as we talk about in the book, straddling class, would say that I live upper middle class in not only in my education and access and the things that I get to participate in and the social capital that I have, but also in the resources and finances, right? So owning my own business and assets and property and all of those things, and the people that I've had access to in order to help me to know what some of that stuff even means and is about, yeah. Right? So. Yeah. So that's a little bit of the class journey. There's so much I can talk about in there, but yeah, that's some of it.
Yeah, just listening to your story, as I've known you for years, like, oh, little things that I didn't know here and there. And we spend a lot of time in conversations around straddling class. And so having family and friends in a different class space, not just around money, but how, as you said, navigating systems. Lately, I've been, for the last couple of years, I'll name myself as a first generation white collar professional, because I think that's really important to add there. And there are blue collar professionals. And so how are we expanding how we feel and think and talk about professional? Right. And so in your space of straddling, because you got lots of access to titles. Right, titles and people and power and influence, and you still stay very true to who you are from like this working class soul space. I'd just kind of like to know, how do you navigate that? Talk about it, notice stuff, right? Like, I mean, we could go on for hours around that, but I'll just ask those.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one of the things that my earlier liberation work in the space of class, because you know, doing race liberation, during sexual orientation liberation, you know, stuff. It invited me into the space of examining minoritized identities from a place of wealth and pride, right? And so I had done race and sexual orientation work so that as I came to class, I had some tools mm-hmm. to kind of look at what the gifts and strengths are that I bring from class. So I celebrate my working class origins. Like I just, you know, when I think about all of the, I always, I laugh all the time, you know, even right here where I am right now in Phoenix, I always know that I can figure out how to navigate having what I need. So food is never an issue for me. I'm always going to know how to find and how to get food, right? Because of the space that I occupy now around class, I can get all I need for very little, right? I have no problem. Like I was at a reception yesterday. I had no problem wrapping up dinner. Mm-hmm. Nothing. None at all. All of that right there is really good for dinner. Y'all gonna do nothing but throw that away. I'm not paying for no dinner tonight, right? So I'm not gonna have to use my money in that way, right? I could wrap up enough for dinner and for lunch today, right? So because I have navigated the space of not feeling shame around that. Now, again, that's not always been the case,
right?
Right, but not feeling shame around it, that I can kind of move into and through spaces and help others not feel shame around it. Because in the space that we occupy, which again, often is middle and upper middle, there is this notion, there's an idea, there's a narrative that you should feel shame or you shouldn't want to take that, or, you know, what does that mean that you have Tupperware or that you're wrapping up some cookies in a napkin? You can justify that if it's like, oh, I'm just going to take these home to the children at one level. But there's a whole nother dynamic around. No. That's for dinner tonight. that's some extra stuff that I going to take to family. So we do this sometimes with students. So here's the thing. We could talk about poor college students needing food, right? Having food insecurity or whatever. We can sometimes allow space even for our blue collar workers, mm-hmm. right? To at the end of an event, it's okay for them. Joe, tell the team, tell the secretaries, tell the custodial staff, come on in and get that extra food. And there we do that with not as much tension, but the hall director or assistant director or faculty member who sees like I could use that, or actually, my whole family got to eat tonight. I'm the only one here who has this white collar job. My rest of my family is still, you know, struggling to eat and struggling to find out stuff. So I have found, so the first place I go is basic needs. And so I entered with food, right? And navigating the importance of being okay with, you know, what you eat, how you eat, understanding that it is a privilege to be able to not worry about food ever, is a thing, right? So that's one of the things. Food, shelter, where you're going to live, how you're going to get around, recognizing that today, those are things that because I don't have to worry about them, I can be freed up to do other things in the world. Mm-hmm. I can be freed up to think. I can be freed up to be creative. I can be freed up to navigate larger world problems, right? And campus and issue problems when you are having to navigate the basics, right? Food, shelter, healthcare. We're right now, Sam and I, my partner and I, are navigating healthcare system mm-hmm. challenges, where it is important that we have it, right? But we're not worried about not having it, right? Because we have the access and the resources to purchase it, right? And that we have the access and resources to purchase quality healthcare, right? Where we don't just have to rely on, whatever we can get, right? So as I think about my own kind of navigating, I do know the space that shows up everywhere from, again, the basic needs, but also what you're supposed to know, mm-hmm. what you're supposed to be able to do, what you're supposed to have read be smart about, to sitting in the position and in the circles that I sit in, you know, how politically smart you're supposed to be, what you're supposed to know about, what you're supposed to know about the world. Like when people say, like, this country in the world or this space, and well, I was here in Uruguay and I was going over to Tahiti, and like, where are they? Mm. Right? You know, they could just as well be in the moon, on the moon. I still don't know. I tell folks all the time, I got to Slippery Rock State College because my geography was that bad. Like, I didn't know Pennsylvania was that big, right? Mm-hmm. I had never been west of West Philly.
Yeah.
Right? So, I navigate all the time today as I talk with my family members and close friends from my a home of origin, when I'm saying I'm in Dubuque, or I'm in I'm in Iowa, or I'm in Oakland, or is that in California? Where is that? Folks don't know what time zone differences. These are all things that class folks who have never left their block, right? Never left their communities, never left their towns, never been on a plane. I'm still with friends and family members sometimes who are taking the first trip on a plane. Never have been on a train and never have been to a concert or to a theater, right? Things that in this class place, I take for granted. I can take for granted.
It's really hitting me, not only the differential life experiences, but as you talked about for a moment, we'd love to do more for a moment and then after break, how then our system set up and classist attitude set up that if you don't have this social capital, class capital, then you're not as smart, therefore you're not promotable, you're not a manager. And what we'd love to really get some of your insights or some of the dynamics of class and classism that you see playing out in organizations. Because mm-hmm. my experience is, and I know we both worked at some of the similar corporations as consultants, they were so into philanthropy and even that language they used. And look how wonderful we are as community members, but did not, and I don't find many, that look inside and say, how are we replicating the same classist dynamics that we are then putting on our website to market ourselves as these great philanthropic organizations, but inside we are creating very dysfunctional, very painful classist organizations. So with that, where do you want to start? We have a couple minutes before break.
Well, Kathy, what I think you're naming again is that because of the dominant and the cultural narrative around pulling yourself up by your bootstrap and raising your class status is supposed to be what you want to do. That's right. That's the American dream, yeah. Right? And that creates the tension around inviting folks to look at the problematic nature of that idea, that ideology, the belief that somehow this class status positions you as better in the world, right? More of a contribution, right? And that's an ideological thing, a belief system that then creates the institutional infrastructures that support that dynamic. You have to believe something first, right? And then create institutions that support that, right? And that's what happens. And so, you know, you want to be up here. So that means you have to learn to talk this way. That means you have to learn to see things in this way. That means you have to know things in this way. That means you have to have these sets of values, right? And that, as you know, again, the great philanthropy, just like the great white hope, right? And the great male saviors, again, it is the coming in to save the day to make it better without recognizing how, as we do that, we continue to perpetuate the systems and create and entrench those systems into our day-to-day practices and ways of being. Yeah. Mm.
So helpful. You're reminding me, we're watching The Crown, the fifth season, and I'm really struck that the folks in the monarchy are reflecting me in that I'm watching them not thank anyone, just expect this elitist treatment. And while I know I have been taught to thank and say please, and I also know in my middle white collar professional and now current upper middle, there's a sense of entitlement that I know I still struggle with. And so while I say thank you, when folks in service roles don't treat me the way I believe I, then there's this. So as we come back, we want to talk more about not only your experience in organizations, what have you personally classes dynamics, what have you seen, and then get to a bit more, how have you seen people try to shift those? But before we go to break, can you let people know how they can find you? Because my guess is after this, your phone will ring. You have about a minute, sorry.
Absolutely. Folks can find me on my website, thewashingtonconsultinggroup.net. That's how you the best way to reach me. We will reach back if you want to connect and talk about lots of this stuff and intersections and all of it. thewashingtonconsultinggroup.net or unityfellowshipchurch.org. So this conversation happens both inside my formal work consulting group as well as in my ministry.
Don't miss the second half with Reverend Dr. Jamie Washington, Dr. Becky Martinez, Dismantling Class and Classism. We'll be back.
Are you ready to put down that drink or drug for good? Are you struggling to maintain your recovery from addictive behaviors? Do you need help with a family member or loved one who's in early recovery or battling addiction? Get the help and guidance you need by arranging a recovery recharged phone session with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified life and recovery coach. Call 1-800-889-1757. Make an appointment today. Or go to my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says Recovery Recharged. Don't wait. Get the help you need today. This is Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Welcome back with the unbelievably amazing Reverend Dr. Jamie Washington, Washington Consulting Group. We left the first half talking about how I have in my class privilege, the sense of entitlement and how dare you not treat me in the ways that I deserve to be treated. And I just embarrassed to share, but A, I don't know if you can relate, seen me in those, but at the group level, how do you see this dynamic of entitlement playing out in organizations? and strategies for trying to get folks in our class privilege to recognize that and dismantle it, so we really work to create truly inclusive organizations.
Well, you know, I love this. And again, Kathy, I resemble all of that and all of it, especially when it comes to travel in this current context, as we are back on the road. Yeah. I was just laughing hard last night as I was boarding this flight and I was flying United Airlines. And, you know, there's this, again, artificial, it's all made up, right? The artificialness of line one and two, like you have to walk on this side and you have to walk on this side, right? Like really? Like there's no, like what? Is you're getting on the same plane. But I was boarding the flight. I'm on United, Premier Access and so on again, you know, right? And it was a long line one, right? Of group one, right? And it was so frigging amazing and funny to me, because I knew I was getting ready to do this today, that this, it was just really stark. So I had walked up and I had at first assumed that, you know, all these people can't be in line one, so let me move on up to the, move further up in line. Right? Oh, you know, but I could see it. So I noticed it and I said, this looks like it's just a long line one. And so as I kept moving back, I said, line one. And then I watched like four or five different men, white men. Now, again, it didn't have to be, but it, you know, because I was in that space too, but it was four or five different white men that just, the plane was boarding up and they was just walking on up and in, and they were incensed. There was this energy around, where are you people going? Don't you see? It's the ones. And so the gentleman that was standing right behind me had said, well, gosh, everyone's going to be on the plane by the time I get on there. So I share that story to say that there is this sense of entitlement and that I earned this space. So around class, differently than maybe race or gender, there is the idea that I worked for this, right? So that I therefore deserve it. And so in the context of organizations and corporations, when parking spots been taken, or when my seat isn't there at the table, or when I don't get to speak and others get to have air, it's there's a tension around, I deserve this.
Yeah, that's good.
In a different way. And so I know that in the church, I see this, that dynamic for those of us who are ordained at different levels in ministry. And so they're going to be a parking space for, or in the crowded space, they're going to make sure that there's a seat for the pastors or for the reverends or for the deacons or for the partners or wives or husbands. So there's the entitlement comes from a place of feeling like I earned it, and having watched others get that because of position that feels different than, you know, than it might feel like because of the artificial construction of race or gender and all those things. So that's what, again, makes, and it's because you're supposed to work to earn it, right? And that you did, you know, I do have a doctorate. You should listen to me, yeah, right? Differently than you listen to her, you know, and we see this today with lots of younger doctoral candidates and doctoral students that, you know, have not had a full year of work experience, but because I now have a doctorate, when I sit at the table, I expect to be heard differently. I expect to have access differently. I expect to be seen as ready to lead the organization. And And then the, you do the intersection of race and gender, who does get to do that and who doesn't, right? Because of that. So it's nuanced and complicated, but there is this notion that I earned it. That's a really powerful class dynamic. So entitlement shows up in that way. And it's something that sometimes people feel very comfortable talking about earning and deserving. And why, that's right, I should be. And others, they're just feeling it, but don't say anything about it, right? And treat people in ways because, right? I even find when I'm trying to get something. So I got into my room last night and I picked up the phone and I called to get, I said, this is Dr. Washington in, right? And experience to get a different kind of service, right, in spaces. Now, what I found without naming that, right, when I step up into a place, and this has happened to me 3 times this week, my smile has gotten me as much as not more as my title, right? And so that the way that you treat people is not about your how much money you make or the position that you have and so on and so forth. Because folks have just they know nothing about, but this is your smile. Your energy is just great. Let me, you know, I want to give you this, give you that and all that stuff. Yeah. Right. So that was just the nuanced difference that I paid attention to this week. Like title I used to ensure I was going to get good service. And then when I just show up as me,
right?
When people don't know anything about positions and, you know, I'm not all dressed in the fancy clothes and all that stuff, the energy is what, how you are in the world with people is what you, when you get what you deserve, right?
And how much of that is your working class, family, church background?
Yes.
Because I did not learn that. Can I share one quick insight I just got?
Yeah.
So I may not be clear. I think imposter syndrome for many folks born into and still in class privilege is true. And so for me, if I don't get listened to and if I don't get seen as competent, then maybe I didn't earn it and I don't deserve.
Oh,
I don't know if that makes sense yet. I haven't figured it out yet. But there's something about the urgency to claim my space and to be heard and seen. Because if I'm not, then I'm a fraud and I am pretending and performing in this class privilege. It's not really.
That's really good.
Now I'm just spinning completely, right? Not in a bad way, but around this earn space. So we think of, right, so Jamie, what you're talking about is the social mobility myth, right? The upward mobility myth that it's here that people want to continue to get to, which higher education, at least very much, we don't just buy into that. Like we create that.
That's right.
And then the earning piece. And so to hear it on both ends. So, you know, to have you, Jamie, and then you, Kathy, be in this space of the earning piece. I hadn't thought about that as much. Maybe I also think about that all the time in regards to treatment. Right. And so there have been moments where I have been arrogant and entitled and think that I deserve. And that's when I'm like not grounded and not paying attention. And it's those like moments of just being like a kind human. Like, how do we have humanity with people, which sometimes we can lose in our spaces of privilege. And so how do we like center our humanity again? And then as I hear about United, right, it's like, I know that there's overhead luggage that people would be concerned about, but everybody has a seat, right? like that's not what those are. What it's an airline that everybody has a seat. So like, hey, first group, you still have your seat.
The same one. That's the right. You're not going to get a different.
It's not Southwest, right? Where you're at C54. Right. And so your seat is guaranteed.
That's right.
But I understand it, like, but like I deserve to be on the plane first, to be as comfortable first and put my luggage where I want to and navigate how I want to and like take all the things out of my bag. And so it's not just about the seat, right? But it's all of these things that the seat provides if you have an early boarding space.
That's right. That's right. And time, right? Time to sit, time to relax, time to think about, exactly. Time to be on a call, time to whatever, right? That's a privilege. That's space that everyone does have. Time not to have to be standing, right? Exactly. So as we talk about class and leisure and what you don't have to be worrying about and thinking about and so on, is very real. And I appreciate you naming that, Becky, on United or American or on Delta, on many of the fly airlines outside of Southwest, you're going to still get your seat.
Right.
So it's about more than the seat. And anywhere in group one, you're going to have space to put your baggage up too, right?
Right.
So you're not going to have to get your bag checked. That was just, a very powerful reminder, nuanced moment in the space. The access to an airline club, right? Mm-hmm. To be able to go in and to sit and, relax is another upper middle class business traveler privilege and all that comes with being in that space. You talk about higher education and other industries, the sense that I've earned this. So because of my title, my position, my years in trade, right? Mm-hmm. That we sometimes aren't as kind to people. I appreciate what Kathy named around. If you're not seeing me as deserving of this, am I a fraud? Right. So I've got this title. I've got this position. I've got this. So the imposter syndrome, and then I must hunker down and make you know who I am. So I show up in these spaces that feel arrogant and justified in terms of kind of the way that I get seen and treated. And we see it in lots of different spaces in that way.
Yeah. One is I think about just pay, right? So we are in this moment where folks that have been working less are in a demand as they should for fair pay. And what I always appreciate having conversations with my mom is she gets really frustrated that she's like, I have been working and doing this for 25 years. Mm-hmm. And somebody who, and she knows that she's been underpaid. And then there's all of this like undervalued and just shitty treatment. And then she's like, and then somebody's going to come in who's worked 3 years and they have the same pay as I do. Right. And it's really hard to talk with your 71-year-old mother about how that should or shouldn't be in like these really deep moments. So how do we create spaces of pay equity, which is critical, and recognize years of experience as also being critical? Like, what is the value? And I hear folks that are older feeling really undervalued, like I've worked 30 years. And now we've got to be able to keep our employees. So somebody who's worked 2 years is going to get the same pay. Mm-hmm. And that's a really complicated conversation to have with leaders, right? Mm-hmm. To have with employees of how it's impacting them on the spectrum of age and experience. Right?
That's right.
So we have these, like, how are we looking at it in critical ways and how it lands and impacts on folks?
Yeah, and it really does show, it shows up differently in the space of our blue collar and our working class folks, who are often the folks who have been in job roles for longer amounts of time. And then new folks or younger or whatever are coming into those same positions kind of making the same, in some cases, more money. And then again, you know, in the spaces where there were professions that did not require a college degree.
Right.
And so now, because you have a college degree, you're getting paid more than the person who doesn't have a college degree, and you don't have the experience, and they have to train you to do the work. So again, a ways that it continues to be perpetuated is we then position formal education over experience.
Right.
And you know, I'm a higher ed geek, and I buy the value of higher education, and I get when it is real and adds value, right? But when it's like, well, you know, not really. Do you deserve to be making $10,000 more than the person who is doing at one level the same job that you are, and in many ways better because of their experience, because you have a 4-year degree? That's a narrative around class.
And the screaming that's happening in me is the system sees people as dispensable. And when your 71-year-old mother is still having to work, the system is set up to privilege folks who were born into class privilege, get education privilege, have healthy, able-bodied privilege. I could keep going. Whereas everyone else is seen as dispensable. And I'm just talking with one client, and they said it's such a toxic environment, but people don't want to speak up. You know, there's no psychological safety because the theme is, and they've been told directly, well, there are 10 more people waiting for your job.
That's right.
Right.
And so classes can play out in such toxic, subtle, almost invisible ways of you should feel lucky to be here, give 200%. And if you don't, we can't abuse and use you, then we will just let you go and find younger, more energetic people that we can use and abuse.
Yeah. That's very real, right? So again, one of the ways that, as you talked about, the weaponization, right, of class and fear around not being able to survive, right? Not being able to have your basic needs met. And it is not as simple as, you know, it might sound, well, just leave there and go somewhere else and get another job. And, you know, all of that takes, you know, some capital, right? It takes personal capital and believing that you can and that you should and that you're worth it and that, you know, that you're going to be seen, that you're going to be heard, right, and valued. If you've got all this experience, but maybe you don't have the degree, right? You know that what you're competing with is all of those who do have degrees, and that you're not in a place today where you can do that, or you, that you see value in that just for doing its sake, right? So the system is really, you know, I appreciated you naming this whole notion of who can retire, right?
Yeah.
And I'm very much aware as I look around at colleagues who could retire at 55. You know, there's a who could retire at 60? Who could retire at 62? That's a whole lot of class privilege a whole lot of safety net and security that, and sometimes that's about financial literacy. Sometimes it is about what you knew and how you knew to do money, right? And where you learned that, and it doesn't necessarily mean that because you come from a poor working class background that you couldn't have gotten smart about that, right? I know lots of poor and working class folks who got really smart, or were with folks who got really smart about investments and money and so on. But that's not the norm, right? That's not, because if it were, the communities that I come from would look different, right? They're really hardworking, really smart people, but they don't know the systems. They don't don't have access to, you know, wealth management or financial management and so on, such that most of the people that I know in those communities are very much working and not, you know, so we've got this whole new, and the language that I'm hearing today is not retirement, but your encore, right?
Wow.
You've done all this great work and contribution. And so now you get to do your encore performance at 60, from 65 to 80 or 65 to 75, right? It's your encore. So you are choosing to continue to have an encore because I'm still healthy and I still want to be a contribution. And I don't need to work,
right?
I don't need to continue to perform. I'm doing this because I want to do this, right? And who gets to have an encore performance versus, right? So when you're doing your encore, you can stop whenever you want. People already got their money's worth out you, right? You still gonna be getting paid. You still getting paid,
right?
If you can't have an encore performance, if you still need to get paid, you still need to work. There's so many folks who are in their 70s some folks close to 80 that are still needing to work so that they can,
live.
Exactly. And again, when you're talking about coming from working class backgrounds, it's very rarely just about you. Right. There is this whole notion that what I have is the families. Right. And so we're taking care. And so those of us who live in the straddling class space, folks like me and Dr. Martinez, you know, who talk about who often are seen as the ones who made it, are the ones who are taking care of their families. I have so many vice presidents and president, particularly minoritized folks, racial minoritized folks, who when we just get together and talk about the phone calls that we get and the cousins we got to help the nephews that we got to help and the refrigerator broke down and these kinds of things, it's a caring for family. And so our resources are often in that way, not only the financial resources, but do you know someone who, right? Can help us to do this or, you know, whether it's get to school or a lawyer or someone who, you know, can get us a building for something. There's a lot that comes with straddling. It's a lot with being the ones who have made it out kind of at the, definitely at the individual level. And then as you show up within systems, the whole notion of code switching is a very real and familiar dynamic when it comes to race. But it's not as clear that that's a dynamic that's happening around class.
Right.
Right? What you dress in, how you speak, what are the things that you celebrate and you tell people about and that you navigate. That's what are the stories that you don't share when you are at work or waiting for the meeting to start because it's not class appropriate?
Everybody breathe. Listeners, breathe. This has been quite a conversation. As we wrap up this conversation and wrap up a year of these offerings, Reverend Dr. Jamie Washington, do you have any final hopes, insights, reflections? And then Dr. Martinez, I would love to pass it to you to close us out, if you're okay with
that. Again, I want to thank you all. And this is such an important, the institutions, and again, my bread and butter right now, and my home is higher education, as I do lots of my professional work, and certainly also in faith communities. But as I speak to my higher ed colleagues, and in particular, we are doing a lot, and businesses, there's a lot of work to bring on first gen folks, right? Well, so we've got first gen people coming in. And there's, again, lots of that is from the place of let's save them, but not recognize the value that they bring into the space. And so as we invite first gen folks in, let's not invite them in with the need to change them and fix them, but to also learn from what they bring that will help us be better in the spaces that we are. Keep doing classwork. It's so important.
Yes, keep doing classwork. So Jamie, thank you for joining us on this last session. Thank you, folks, for being present for these sessions that we have delved into who we are individually, to who we are systemically, and the groups that we belong to around class. You know, Kathy and I want to just emphasize, continue to do the work. Don't let this be a stopping place. We did some learning, and it is a process, and it is a journey, and it doesn't end. Right. And so how do we create our space in the world to create more inclusion through a class lens? And so keep on digging, keep on being curious, keep on noticing how it exists in your organization. And thank you for joining us. Kathy, anything from you?
From my soul, I love and thank you both. I'll have a few more radio shows. I wanted to use my last few to look at class. Fascinating. Race and racism with a class intersection. And so just so grateful for both of you, for who you are in our lives. Listeners, we couldn't do this without you.
Thank you.
Keep coming in, Center for Transformation Class Radio. Fascinating. I can't stop saying class. This is where we all need to be.
Yes.
Go well in these days. We'll see you all next time.
Thanks to our producers. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. It was wonderful.
You've been listening to Dr. Kathy Aubert on Transformation Talk Radio. Thanks for tuning in, and be sure to catch us next time as Kathy inspires listeners to become agents of change, motivate, innovate, and speak truth to power. Step into the courageous you that will change the world. Connect to life-changing conversations to extend your reach. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyaubert.com. That's drkathyaubert.com.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.